They slept on a pile of hay in the wagon yard and had breakfast at the boarding house on the county's dollar. Eve stood on the porch and watched as Huey and Walter rode away toward the ranch. Walter kept looking back. The cowboys at Tarpley's ranch had a bronc hemmed against the fence in a round corral. Greedy Welch took a firm grip on the horse's ears.
Throw the saddle on him, Fat!
Yeah.
Fat lifted the saddle from the ground. He dropped it and ran for the fence when the bronc jumped in his direction. For a man of his weight, he moved with alacrity.
Help me here, Shorty.
The bronc tried to kick and pitch, but Greedy did not lose his hold on the ears. Shorty fought to put the saddle into place.
All right, Huey, he's yours.
Watching the pony's efforts to fight, Huey had second thoughts about being so quick to volunteer.
Kind of wiggly, ain't he?
Oh, playful is all. There ain't nothing to it. You just plant yourself in the middle and keep one leg on each side. Anybody can do it. Except maybe Fat.
Huey was well aware that close to a dozen men were watching him, including Tarpley and Walter. He clamped his teeth together in determination and reached for the saddle horn. He swung up and firmly planted both feet in the stirrups.
Turn him loose!
Grady released his hold on the bronc's ears and stepped quickly out of the way. The horse kicked at him in passing, but missed.
Show him who's ball!
The bronc made several ineffective crow hops. Huey's confidence came back in a rush. He turned his head in a search for Walter and saw his brother sitting on the fence.
Like Grady said, there ain't nothing to it.
He was unprepared when the bronc suddenly twisted back and seemed to turn himself wrong side out. Huey's neck felt as if it had snapped in two. He was aware of two high jumps, both ending in a jarring impact as all four hooves struck the ground hard at one time. For a moment, he was suspended in the air with nothing under him. The horse was gone. Huey's rump struck first. The back of his head thumped solidly against the packed earth. His teeth came together and bit his tongue. He lay stunned, aware that the bronc was still pitching, empty stirrups slapping against its sides. Grady leaned over and extended his hand to help Huey to his feet.
Oh, you just can't lay there and let him get away with that. If he thinks he's run his bluff on you, he'll try it every time.
It took Huey a minute to regain enough breath to answer. He rubbed the back of his aching neck. The bronc had stopped pitching, but still circled the pen in a run.
You sure he was bluffing? I had a notion he meant business.
A colt like that has always got some play in him. You don't want to let him get the idea that you're afraid of him, do you?
No, I wouldn't want him thinking that.
Huey waited in vain for someone to volunteer to take over for him.
All right, catch him. As long as I've still got a chip to play, I don't quit a losing game.
All this fun and getting paid for it, too. What man wouldn't love this kind of job?
Huey lasted longer the next time. He expected the quick reversal and leaned into it. He managed to survive several jumps before he lost one stirrup and then the other. He struck the ground feet first. It was not as painful as before.
Hey, you're getting the hang of it.
The tiring bronc was dripping sweat as Huey got on him again. This time the reversal was slower. The jumps were not so high. Huey gripped hard with his knees and remained in the saddle until the horse wore itself down and quit, heaving for breath. Grady walked out to hold the animal while Huey dismounted, his legs quivering from fatigue.
You done good, Huey. You're beginning to look like an honest-to-God west of the Pecos cowpuncher.
Beaming, Huey looked toward his brother.
Told you, Walter! We've about got this cowboy thing whipped!
Tarpley had been watching from the other side of the fence.
Someday you're liable to be worth a whole dollar a day. Maybe in a year or two.
By the next spring's branding time, Huey and Walter had diminished C.C. Tarpley's fortune by about $200 apiece at 75 cents a day. Walter still had most of his earnings stuffed in the toe of a sock under the corn shuck mattress covering his cot. Huey had barely enough left to buy tobacco. He contended that money was meant to be spent so the poor folks could get their share. He didn't consider himself poor folks, not at 6 bits a day. He had invested in a new saddle at $27, boots like Grady Welch's, a wide-brimmed hat, and a pair of leather chaps to turn away mesquite thorns. To replace his cheap OK spurs, he bought a pair with silver-plated shanks shaped like a woman's leg. He considered that he made a handsome shadow on horseback. Walter inherited Huey's OK spurs.
The horses can't tell the difference.
Tarpley did not waste his assets on unnecessary equipment or by building a lot of corrals to make the cowboys work easier. His position was that if hands didn't want to work, they shouldn't have hired on. Most of the branding took place in the open. A skeleton crew held the gathered herd in check while the calves were roped and dragged out to a fire where the branding irons were heated. Flankers threw them down and held them while the animals were branded and earmarked and the bull calves were castrated. It was an honor of sorts to be chosen to do the roping. The job was usually assigned to the most accomplished in the use of the loop. Among the Tarpley crew, that meant Grady Welch. Grady had been in the saddle a couple of hours, catching smaller calves around the neck, larger ones around the hind feet, and dragging them out to flankers, including Huey and Walter. One mark of an experienced roper was hands scarred by rope burns or missing parts of one or more fingers, pinched off between the rope and saddle horn. On this go-round, Grady approached, bent over in pain, hugging his right arm tightly against his chest. He rode back toward the fire, his face twisted. Huey saw that his sleeve was torn, his arm an angry red.
Rope got twisted around my wrist. Like to have burned my arm off.
Tarpley walked over to look. He was conservative with sympathy, as with all else.
Better go to the wagon and get some of Soapy's bacon grease. Rub it in real good.
Maybe he'd better go to a doctor.
That's too far to town. Bacon grease will fix about anything except a broken leg.
He waved away any further discussion and went to what he saw as his larger and more immediate problem.
Just lost my best healer. Huey, I notice you're getting handy with a rope.
I've been practicing with Grady.
Then climb aboard Grady's horse and get at it. Can't have flankers idling around here drawing a wage, not doing nothing to earn it.
Huey's elation at being trusted with such a responsibility was compromised by guilt, inasmuch as it had come at Grady's expense.
Find you another flanking partner, Walter.
Under Grady's instruction, Huey had roped at anything that would move, and much that wouldn't. The chickens learned to run at the sight of him. The tomcat that headquartered in the barn was missing some of its fur. A hoe handle had never fit Huey's hands, but a rope felt just right. For a while, he caught every unbranded calf at which he aimed. He hadn't missed a loop. He hoped Tarpley was paying attention, but he doubted that he was. Tarpley took it for granted that his men could do any job to which he assigned them. If they couldn't, they didn't belong with the two C's. The only exception was Fat Girvin. Huey often wondered why Tarpley tolerated him. When it came to cowboy work, he was as useless as teats on a boar hog. Huey's arm eventually began to tire, and he started missing a loop now and again. Fat, working as a flanker, began offering unwanted advice.
Try roping left-handed. You couldn't do no worse.
Huey missed another.
You going blind? I can do better with a sack over my head.
Huey was tempted to step down and put a sack over Fat's head. Following Grady's lead, he had been roping the larger calves by the hind feet because they could put up less of a fight than if caught around the neck. He made his way slowly through the herd and picked the biggest unbranded bull calf he could find. It was probably close to being a yearling. He dropped a small loop around its neck and began drawing the animal toward the branding fire. It kicked and pitched and bawled in anger and fear.
Caught him first loop, Fat! He's all yours!
Fat didn't want him, but pride wouldn't let him back away with everybody watching and hoping to see him make a fool of himself. Tentatively, he reached to grab a leg. The calf kicked him in the belly with a lightning-fast hind foot. Fat reeled. Fat grabbed the agitated animal around the neck and bounced around like a ball on the end of a string. The calf shook him off and stepped on him. Walter and Shorty moved in to bring the animal down. Fat was on his knees. Huey was tempted to taunt him, but seeing a scarlet hue in Fat's round face was enough. Huey looked around and saw Grady trotting from the chuck wagon toward the branding fire, a distance of 200 yards. The branding was always done far enough away from the wagon to keep the dust from settling on the food. Grady was almost out of breath as he hurried up to Tarpley.
Trouble coming, Cece.
Grady turned and pointed. Four horsemen approached from the north. Tarpley squinted.
Damnation. Eli Jessup. Can't be looking for much of a fight, only bringing three men with him.
He can do a right smart of damage without help. Folks tell me he charged the Comanche camp once all by himself.
Wasn't but two Indians in it. One of them was crippled. If he could fight like he can brag, ain't no telling how much mischief he could do.
Huey had been hearing the Jessup name for months, but he'd never seen the man until now. He knew only that bad blood ran between Jessup and Tarpley for years. Both men wanted to become the biggest rancher in West Texas. It was not a distinction that could be shared. Jessup was no taller than Tarpley, but outweighed him by 40 or 50 pounds. On windy days, Huey thought Tarpley needed to carry rocks in his pockets to keep from blowing away. In contrast to Tarpley, Jessup dressed more like a banker than a dust-eating rancher. He wore a vest and a string tie, and his hat looked new. His saddle bore the marks of an expert saddle maker. It was evident he had money, and he liked to spend it, at least on himself. His principal facial feature was a bushy but well-combed mustache mixed gray and black. He had a broad nose, perhaps broken in some long-ago fight, and sharp eyes that tried to burn a hole in whatever they looked upon. Jessup paid no attention to anyone except Tarpley. He rode up so close that Tarpley could have touched the horse's nose.
Are you Brandon?
Tarpley met the question with contempt.
Of course we're Brandon. Did you think he was throwing a dance?
Thought I ought to come over and be sure you wasn't losing your eyesight in your old age. Maybe putting your brand on calves that rightfully ought to carry a J-bar.
If I was gonna steal cattle, I'd steal better than that scrub stock you raise.
Huey looked for a reaction in Jessup's face. The rancher never changed expression.
How'd you know? You couldn't tell a cull heifer from a high-grade bull. Mind if we ride through your herd and look for any stray J-bars?
Nobody cuts my herd but me. But if it'll ease your mind, first thing we done was to cut out the J-bar cows and their calves. It wasn't hard to spot. I got two men right now driving the sorry specimens back onto your range and off my grass.
Your grass? Most of this land still belongs to the state of Texas. As a taxpayer, I'm a part owner. I got as much right to use it as you do.
Same goes for your place. We're both just squatters if you come right down to it. But I don't need to be a squatter forever. I buy every acre I can as soon as it comes on the market.
Well, don't you get any notions about buying anything out from under me. I moved in when the Comanches moved out, and I got a shotgun claim on every acre of it.
Jessup jerked his head as a signal for his three boys to leave with him. But one lanky, lazy-looking rider hung back. He grinned at Grady Welch, a gold tooth shining.
How do, Grady? Why don't you come over and work for a good outfit again?
Well, howdy, Snort. How long since you throwed a real fumble, stumble, and fall down drunk?
Too long. We'll get together one day and see which of us can soak up the most brave maker without falling over dead.
Well, you'd have the advantage. You'd had a lot more practice than me.
Like hell. Me and you was to both quit drinking, the whole state of Kentucky would go bust.
Snort saw that his boss was 50 yards on his way.
Gotta go before he fires me again. He's already done it twice this month. See you in town, Grady.
He rode off with a careless ease, letting his shoulders sag. Huey observed that the animosity between the two owners was not shared by their hands. He felt drawn to the Jessup cowboy on first sight.
Who's your friend?
Snort Yarnell. He's a top hand and a good old boy, but he don't give a damn whether school keeps or not. Been fired off nearly every ranch on the Pecos River. He acts like he's still just 12 years old.
Man with any gumption about him would rather herd sheep than hire out to Eli Jessup. Let's get back to work before the irons go cold.
Tarpley's cattle were scattered over more than 300 square miles, fronting on the Pecos. It was not fenced. Fencing cost money. So Tarpley and his crew worked 20 or so square miles at a time, rounding up all the cattle within a rough circle. After the calves were branded, the herd was turned loose, the wagon was moved, and the next circle was worked. Each lapped over the edges of those adjoining it to pick up any unworked cattle that might drift. It took all spring to get the branding done. Not until the wagon was ready to return to headquarters did Tarpley reluctantly pay off the cowboys and allow them to go to town.
Now, don't y'all do anything to cause me shame. Upton City is a nice, quiet little place. Folks here have got a lot of respect for C.C. Tarpley. I'm even thinking of starting a bank there one of these days, when I got a little spare money saved up. It'll be a place where you boys can put your earnings, see them grow.
Huey didn't say so, but the thought came to him that Tarpley would probably charge his borrowers a lot more interest than he would pay to his depositors. Besides, if a man put his money in a bank, there was always a risk of it being robbed. If he invested it in a rousing good time, nobody could take that away from him.
I'm leaving the biggest part of my money here so I don't spend it in town.
Well, mine can't do me any good if it's here and I'm there. What if a bronc was to throw me off and break my neck? I'd rather go to my rest remembering the fun I had instead of thinking about the money I left laying here going to waste.
C.C. Tarpley didn't get where he is by spending all his money on fun and frolic.
And where is he? Does he own this ranch or does it own him? I'll bet he lays awake half the night worrying about losing it. I don't own nothing, so I got no worries.
The time will come when you'll want to get married and settle down. You'll be glad if you save something.
Get married and take on all that responsibility? I remember how hard Pa worked to keep Ma and us fed and a roof over our heads. What good did it do him? Ma died and we set out on the drift. Pa went to his grave, a tired old man with nothing to show for all that work.
He went knowing he tried his best. He felt justified in the sight of the Lord.
The Lord ought not to have worked him so hard. He ought to have let him have more pleasure along the way.
Pa had his own idea of pleasure. Even with all his troubles, he never gave up his dream. He was a happy man.
Well, I'm a happier one, not having any troubles.
Reedy and Huey led the cowboy procession. Walter and the others were strung out behind for 50 yards. They all spurred up when the town came into view.
Look out, Upton City! Here comes the two C's! Bring out the women and the whiskey!
The women in Upton City are mostly too young, too old, or too married. Anyway, Fat wouldn't know what to do with one even if he could catch her.
Huey had noticed the lack of women on his previous visit. The only ones he had seen close up were Eve and Mrs. Pearson.
If it wasn't for the saloon, they could call this place Saint's Roost.
I'm hungry enough to eat a side of beef by myself. I'm going to the boarding house to see if supper's ready.
Huey frowned. He knew supper was not the primary reason Walter was interested in going to the boarding house.
It's been months since we was here last. Like as not, she's married some dry goods drummer by now.
Then again, maybe she hasn't.
It wouldn't do to let their horses stand all night tied to a hitching post. Grady led the two C's men to the stable so their mounts could be freed of the saddles and receive the unaccustomed luxury of being fed oats.
If we deserve a holiday in town, so do they.
A boy of 12 or so met the horseman at the stable's front door.
Where's Sandy at?
Dad's out looking after his cattle. Left me to watch things.
Pretty big responsibility for a boy your size.
I can handle it. He always lets me do it when he's gone from town. And he's gone a lot.
Give him a good bait of oats. To watch that none of them kick the others.
I'll feed your horses.
I'm still talking, boy. Where you going? Remember now. Watch that none of them kick the others out of the way and founder themselves. When it comes to feed, these two C's horses ain't got good manners.
The boarding house wouldn't have been Huey's next choice of a place to go, but his stomach was talking to him, and so was Walter. Huey gave in to his brother's argument.
All right. I doubt that the boys can soak it all up before we get there. Ain't good to drink on an empty stomach anyway. You get drunk too fast and then you're through.
Remember now, you've got to sidle up to Mrs. Pearson on her good side, or she won't let you in the house.
If she has a good side, she kept it turned away from me.
The landlady met the three on the porch. Grady removed his hat and made a wide sweep with it as he bowed.
Mrs. Pearson, there's three lank and hungry cowpokes here who can't wait to be blessed by your wonderful cooking. My old mother back in the Piney Woods couldn't match the fixings that you lay on your table.
A tiny smile managed to escape before she covered it with a frown.
Save your sweet talk for them too young to know better. I can recognize Blarney when I hear it.
She gave Huey and Walter a second examination.
Seems I remember you two. Wasn't you here once with that ranger Tanner?
Yes, ma'am, we was.
Too bad what happened to Tanner afterwards.
I didn't know anything had. Out at the ranch, we don't hear much.
He was delivering two prisoners from here to somewhere back east. One of them managed to hit him over the head, then shoot him with his own pistol.
Killed him?
No, just bunged him up some from what I heard. He could have bled to death, but the other prisoner stayed and took him where he could get help.
Do you know who the prisoners were?
All I know is that they were in jail here for cattle rustling. They were wanted somewhere else for worse.
Smith and Chum. It'd be Smith that done the shooting. So now he's on the loose. No telling where at.
I wouldn't think he's mad enough to come back here looking for you. Too much risk. He probably rode from Mexico as fast as his horse could carry him.
Yeah, I guess.
Huey tried to dismiss the thought, but it wouldn't leave him. He felt that he needed a drink more than he needed supper. Walter followed Mrs. Pearson through the door.
Are you coming?
Go ahead on. I'll be along.
Huey stood on the porch a minute, staring into the distance. He knew the notion was foolish, but he couldn't help feeling that Smith Trumbull might be out there somewhere right now, drawing a bead on him. Brady clapped him on the shoulder.
Don't worry. Nobody's gonna hurt a two-C's cowhand. C.C. Tarpley wouldn't stand for that.
Well, that sure makes me feel better.
Several men waited in the parlor. For all Huey could tell, they might have been the same ones he saw the last time, though they probably weren't. He just didn't pay a lot of attention to drummers and lawyers. Judge Stone came in and placed his derby hat carefully on the rack. He recognized Huey and moved toward him.
You've heard what happened to your friend Lantana?
Just now from Mrs. Pearson.
He should have retired from the Rangers a long time ago. Instead, he's back on the job chasing outlaws again.
Maybe that's all he knows to do.
Age must have made him careless, or he wouldn't have let a criminal seize the advantage.
I hear the other prisoner helped Lynn.
That helped lighten his sentence when he went to trial. Meanwhile, Trumbull is back in every Ranger's fugitive book.
I just hope he's not out here somewhere looking for me.
I'm sure he has more pressing matters on his mind than going after revenge on some dollar-a-day cowboy.
6 bits.
Eve came out of the kitchen carrying a platter of sliced roast to the table. She glanced toward the men in the parlor, her gaze lighting upon Walter. He gave her a quick bow.
How do, Miss Eve? It is still Miss, I hope.
Certainly.
She stared at him, evidently trying to remember who he was.
Oh, yes, you were in here a few months ago with your brother. I remember you sitting on the porch the next morning waiting for breakfast.
Yes, that was me. And a good breakfast it was.
We do our best to please.
She went back into the kitchen. Walter turned to Huey, beaming.
Told you she wouldn't be married.
I don't see where that makes any difference. You're too young to think about marrying. You couldn't afford it in the first place.
I won't always be working for 6 bits a day.
No, the time may come when you're making a dollar. That still won't be enough.
The saloon was as plain as every other commercial building in town, constructed of rough sawed lumber that had never been blessed by a coat of paint. A dozen or so horses were tied to hitch racks and posts up and down the street.
The boys got a head start on us.
We'll catch up.
Fat Gervin sat at a table alone, his head bent forward.
Whoa, what kind of wagon ran over Fat?
It don't take much for Fat. He can get drunk just sniffing the cork.
Grady led the Calloways over to the bar. The bartender didn't bother to ask what they wanted. He poured whiskey into 3 glasses and shoved them forward.
2 bits apiece.
Huey dug into his pocket for the bankroll that had been resurrected from near death when Tarpley paid his hands. 2 bits for a larrupin' good supper and 2 bits for a shot of whiskey. A sound investment, he thought.
You ought to get a piano in here.
The man wiped up a few drops of whiskey with a dirty rag.
There ain't 2 people in town could play it. Anyway, the music I like best is the sound of coins ringing on this bar.
Hey, Grady! About time you got yourself in here.
Snort Yarnell lifted a bottle for him to see, then tipped it over when he set it back down on the round table in front of him.
Bring us a fresh bottle. This soldier is dead.
How long has Snort been here?
Long enough to drink up more money than he could earn in a month. Can't seem to get him full.
I'll try.
Grady reached across the bar and grasped a bottle, then nodded for Huey and Walter to follow him. Snort arose to extend his hand and almost overturned the table.
You boys light and squat. I want you to meet some of my J-Bar compadres.
Hey. Howdy, howdy.
They all shook hands. Huey knew he wouldn't remember the names for 5 minutes. Grady uncorked his bottle and poured 7 drinks.
How come you in town, Snort? Did Jessup finish his Brandon?
Nope. Still at it. Brandon Camp is just a little ways out of town.
But my nose got sore from all that burning hair, my ears were ringing from all them bawling cattle. I decided it was time me and my compadres took ourselves a little vacation.
You left before the branding was done? You're liable to get fired again.
Already been. But it don't matter. I got to counting and found I had more than $50 in my pocket. Why should I keep working when I'm damn near rich?
Snort drained his glass without stopping for breath.
You won't be rich long. Not at this rate.
Then I'll go back to work. There's always more work out there than a man can get done, but there ain't that many good times. Figure I'd better enjoy myself before I get stomped to death by some outlawed bronc.
Snort winked.
Or shot by some jealous husband.
Yeah, a handsome fella like you is always a big threat around the women folks.
Huey thought Snort was about as homely a cowboy as he'd seen yet. His nose was large and his ears stuck out. The gold tooth called attention to the fact that the rest were crooked. When the Lord had passed out looks, Snort was probably asleep behind the barn. Drunk, maybe.
Drink up, boys! Next bottle is on me and old man Jessup. I'm squandering his wealth one drink at a time.
The seven had just about polished off Grady's bottle when four men strode in. One, Huey recognized as rancher Eli Jessup. The other's clothing and boots proclaimed them to be cowpunchers. He thought he remembered seeing one with Jessup the day the neighboring rancher showed up at Tarpley's branding. He stood better than 6 feet tall and axe-handled broad in the shoulders.
Yonder they are!
Jessup led the others toward the corner where Snort sat. Snort raised his glass.
The J-Bars have arrived! You boys set yourselves down and have a drink.
Drink hell! You all are going back to work right now!
Jessup jerked his head toward the door. Three J-Bar men quickly stood up and weaved their way outside. He did not have to tell them twice. Snort just sat there.
What about you?
You fired me.
Well, you're unfired. Damn you, you gutted my branding crew. Now get up from there and find your horse.
Snort grinned and poured another drink. Jessup turned to the big cowboy.
Bring him, Mitch. Get him back to the wagon. Alive, if you can. Mount and get back to camp. You're burning daylight and we've got a ranch to run, you sorry sons of bitches.
Mitch seemed to tower over Snort.
You look like you've had enough. Mr. Jessup said fetch you.
I ain't ready to be fetched. And that's still young, and so am I.
It ain't polite to ride off before the work's done. Mr. Jessup got his feelings hurt. When his feelings are hurt, he sees to it that the rest of us hurt, too.
The cowboy extended a muscled arm that would do credit to a blacksmith.
I'll help you up.
Snort gripped the edge of the table with both hands.
I ain't going. Old Eli fired me.
You heard him say he's unfired you. Now, come on.
I'm a freeborn citizen of the sovereign state of Texas. Go tell him I'll stay fired as long as I want to.
Mitch grabbed Snort's arm and tried to pull him away from the table. Two of the newly arrived Jessup cowhands moved to help. Grady pushed quickly to his feet.
Snort ain't going any place he don't want to. Turn him loose.
Mitch struck Grady in the face. Huey jumped up and grabbed Mitch, shoving him against the wall.
Ain't nobody hits a friend of mine.
He punched the cowboy in the stomach. It felt as hard as a cedar stump. Huey knew he'd hurt himself more than he hurt Mitch. Somebody grabbed Huey's shoulder and jerked him backward. Huey tripped over a chair and fell. He came up swinging, only to meet Mitch's fist. It jarred him like the kick of a mule. Two men immediately piled on him, knocking him flat on the floor. Mitch and one other became heavily involved with Grady. Snort Yarnell continued to sit in the corner, happily watching the fight as if he bought a ticket.
Hey, Grady, down! Oh, he didn't listen.
Grabbed the bottle when one of the combatants fell against the table, but he was unable to save the glasses.
Sure has got nausea in here.
Huey was in a bad way, the two men holding him down and punching him about the head. Walter joined the fray, pulling one of the men off and driving a fist into his face. The other two seized punchers gathered around, not joining in. Like Snort, they remained enthusiastic spectators. Huey half hoped the sheriff would show up and stop the fight, for he was getting the worst of it. Instead, it was Snort who brought the fracas to an end. He tugged at Grady's shoulder, then reached down and got hold of Huey's shirt.
Grady! Huey! You've had fun enough. Now stop whooping up on friends of mine. Hell! You're all friends of mine. Ain't no use in friends fighting friends.
Grady felt his bruised jaw.
We done it to help you, Snort.
Huey rubbed bleeding knuckles against a trouser leg.
All right, Mitch. I'll go back to camp with you in the morning. I'll be broke by then anyhow. Now, all you boys, have a drink. Ain't no use in anybody carrying a grudge. We're all friends here.
The J-Bar hands and the two C's men eyed each other warily. Snort put one arm around Mitch and the other around Huey.
You all shake and let's uncork another bottle.
Hesitantly, Huey extended his hand. Pain shot through Huey when Mitch gripped it. He managed a half-hearted smile, though his lower lip was split.
Let's drink to Eli Jessup and to C.C. Tarpley, the two biggest skinflints on the Pecos River. May they live long and die of the piles.
Huey heard a thump. Fat had slumped forward, his head striking the table where he sat alone. When his bottle rolled off onto the floor, Fat made no effort to retrieve it. He didn't know it was gone. Jessup re-entered the saloon and didn't appear pleased to see that the combatants had made peace. He placed his knotted fists on his hips.
Any man of mine not back at the wagon by morning don't need to come back at all.
As he stomped out, Huey thought that there was a man who ought to be an officer in the army, or at least a fancy house bouncer in Hell's Half Acre.
Don't worry, boys. He needs us to get that Brandon done. Come morning, he'll be his natural self. Still mad as hell.
In a little while, a stranger walking in would not have been able to tell the J-Bars from the two C's. They were all mixed up together and having a good time. Awakening, Huey found himself lying on a pool table in the back of the saloon. He didn't remember how he got there. Rising up on one elbow, he thought every muscle in his body had declared war on him. Walter lay on the floor, half covered by his blanket. His eyes were open. Huey couldn't see a mark on him. His part of the fight had been minimal.
You all in one piece, Huey?
I don't know. Feels like I'm scattered a little.
Grady was sitting up, leaning against a back wall. Snort lay under a table. The rest of the two C's and J-Bar hands were lying here, there, and yonder. The front door opened, and the bartender walked in, stopping to survey his domain.
Looks like the walls are still standing. You boys get up. I need to swamp out in here.
Huey vaguely remembered the bartender leaving about midnight, admonishing the cowboys to keep track of their drinks so everybody could settle in the morning. It would have been easy for the men to have left early without squaring up on what they owed, but few would have considered doing that. It was accepted as holy writ that they paid for what they drank and settled for what they broke. Oh. Huey looked around for some notion of the damage. Beyond a few smashed glasses, the only casualty he saw of last night's little wrestling match was a broken chair. The bartender built a fire and a flat-bellied, flat-topped stove and set a large coffee pot to boil.
If you boys want the hair of the dog, come over to the bar. If you'd rather have coffee, it'll be ready directly.
Most of the punchers elected to wait for the coffee, though Snort and Grady stumbled to the bar and leaned on it for support.
I'm for having breakfast over at the boarding house. What about you, Huey?
Huey started to shake his head, but it hurt too much.
How do I look?
If you feel as bad as you look, you got one foot in the grave.
Well, then go by yourself. That old lady would probably take a broom and sweep me out into the street.
After Walter left, Huey made his way by stages to the stove to listen to the coffee boil. The bartender brought a glass of water and poured it in to settle the grounds.
Help yourselves, boys.
Huey's joints hurt, and his cheek and nose were sore to the touch. His knuckles were skinned and bruised. He poured a cup of coffee. Huey sat down to hold it between his hands, hoping its warmth might draw out some of the ache. It struck him strange that the J-Bar men he fought with last night sat at the table with him, as friendly as if nothing had happened. They looked to be in about as bad a shape as he was. There was probably a lesson in this somewhere, he thought. He'd study on it when he felt better.
Where's Walter?
Said he was going to the boarding house for breakfast. I think mainly wanted another look at that young woman.
Eve? I ain't surprised. She's a nice girl and pleasant to the eyes.
I don't know. Sort of skinny, I thought.
She comes from good folks, but poor as church mice. They've had a hard time keeping groceries on the table. That's why she works for Mrs. Pearson.
Huey thought about Pa. The problem in East Texas hadn't been dryness as much as used-up soil and ravenous insects, poor markets, and high interest. A farmer's life was seldom peaches and cream. It was more often skim milk and clabber.
Walter's too young to be thinking about women. He ain't nothing but a kid.
You're not paying attention. He's 21, at least. If he wasn't thinking about women, well, there'd be something wrong with him.
Grady arched an eyebrow.
Anything wrong with you, Huey?
Nothing except being dumb enough to get into somebody else's fight.
Huey gave Snort a critical glance.
I don't see no bruises on you.
They're friends of mine.
I wish you'd told us that before.
I started to, but then it turned into a dandy scrap. Broke up the monotony.
I'd like to broke my jaw.
After partaking of the bartender's coffee, the J-Bar cowboys started riding off in the direction of their branding camp. Mitch swung into the saddle.
I wish I could invite you fellas out to the wagon for breakfast, but old Eli would paw and beller about feeding C.C. Tarpley's hands, even if the beef is C.C.'s.
Bellering don't hurt him. A little aggravation helps keep his blood from clotting up.
Thanks anyway, but if we was to go to your wagon, C.C. might think we were swapping sides.
There ought not to be any sides. But I guess that's the way it is when you get two old mossy horns butting heads. Let's just try to see that none of us hands gets caught up in their feud.
Old men start the wars and send young men off to fight them.
Mitch put his horse into an easy lope to catch up to the other J-Bar cowboys. Snort held back a minute.
Thank you, Grady, for taking my part last night.
His big hand was heavy on Huey's shoulder.
And Huey Calloway. You're a good old boy. Hell, we're all good old boys.
Slouching in the saddle, Snort rode after his friends. The two C's hands made their way to the general store. They breakfasted on crackers, sardines, and canned tomatoes. None wanted to visit Mrs. Pearson's boarding house. She probably wouldn't let them in, and even if she did, they wouldn't want to hear her lecture on abstinence and clean living. After last night, they were already convinced anyway. Walter wandered back after a while, picking his teeth and looking much too contented.
I can tell you've been talking to that girl.
Eve told me about her folks, and I told her about ours. She said there's a dance night in Shelby's barn. Since we don't have to be back at the ranch yet, I thought I'd go.
You don't know how to dance.
I've watched it done. Ain't nothing to it. You just walk in a circle and drag your feet.
You want to get your arms around that girl, is all. It's dangerous. Women are always out to hook you for whatever they can get.
What would you know? The only women you ever spent time with were Big Bessies and places like hers.
Huey's cheeks stung.
That ain't so.
He knew it was.
You weren't near as sneaky as you thought you were. I always knew where you went.
Huey couldn't think of a good response.
Well, anyway, what do you want with a skinny farm girl? First thing you know, she'll be sweet-talking you about getting married. You'll end up working in a store or pushing a plow because there ain't no cowboy can support a wife.
Who's talking about getting married? I don't hardly know her yet.
Well, be careful. You may get to know her a lot more than you intended to. She'll have one ring on her finger and another one in your nose.
Huey knew he had to nip this thing in the bud. He just didn't know how. Shelby was a horse trader who had built a barn at the edge of town. Part of it had a wooden floor fit for dancing. It bore the strong smell of horses, and horse liniment, hay, and old leather. That was little hindrance to the citizens of Upton City. It was a ranch town, and they were used to such things. Huey was hesitant about going to the dance. He would rather spend the evening in the saloon, quietly contemplating life's deeper meaning. But he felt that Walter needed a chaperone. He might be past 21, as Grady had pointed out, but to Huey, he was still a kid whose inexperience made him vulnerable. He could be manipulated by people who might have their own interests in mind rather than his. He still felt sore in most of his joints, and he knew without looking in a mirror that his face was swollen.
Reckon anybody'll notice?
Walter studied him critically.
Not if you stay in the dark end of the barn. If you're worried about what people might think, you don't need to go over there. I'm old enough to take care of myself.
Well, I wish I was as sure as you are.
Huey ran a comb through his hair and found another tender spot he'd not known about.
I promised Pod look out for you.
What could happen to me here? Being in this town is like being in church almost.
I've been to funerals in church. And a wedding or two.
Word had gone out that Shelby didn't want any drinking in his barn, which indicated to Huey that this dance would be about as much fun as a memorial service. But as he and Walter walked toward the sound of fiddle music, he saw that though the letter of the law might be observed, its spirit was being broken like a barroom mirror. He observed men stashing bottles and wagons and buggies, and in a couple of bushes just outside the door.
Yeah, maybe the night ain't lost after all.
You ain't going to get drunk, I hope.
Me? You know I wouldn't do such a thing as that and embarrass you in front of your girl.
The idea suddenly seemed to have a lot of merit.
She's not my girl. Yet.
A goodly crowd was already in the lantern-lit barn when Huey and Walter arrived. Besides town folk, many had come from ranches for miles around. Huey found himself looking at the faces, searching for the cattle thief named Smith Trumbull. He realized how foolish that was. In this town where he was known, and in a crowd like this, was surely the last place Smith would want to be. Huey recognized a couple of J-Bar cowboys he saw the previous evening. They evidently sneaked in from Eli Jessup's branding camp. A few of the 2C's cowboys were there too. One was Fat Gervin. His belly stretched a clean new shirt that was still wrinkled from being folded in a stack at the general store. Huey found a dark corner where his bruises and contusions would not be so obvious. He watched the dancers, stepping with enthusiasm. He picked up the rhythm and tapped his foot. This was his kind of music. He hoped Eve would arrive with some man, which might discourage Walter from pursuing her. He was disappointed, for she and Mrs. Pearson came through the door together. Fat Gervin immediately hurried toward her, but Walter got there first. She curtsied, and he shook her hand as he would shake with any cowboy he met. Mrs. Pearson gave Walter a critical study. He looked well-brushed and combed, but it was obvious that her suspicions were not allayed. Music and the sound of dancers' feet sliding across rough pine prevented Huey from hearing what she said. Walter took Eve in his arms and moved awkwardly onto the floor with her. Mrs. Pearson watched like a mother hen concerned about a wayward chick. Huey had been right about Walter not knowing how to dance, but he made a creditable effort. Eve offered him guidance. After a few tunes, he'd improved considerably. Walter danced Eve over to where Huey stood.
Look at her, Huey. She's the prettiest girl here.
Huey couldn't argue with that, but the competition wasn't substantial. Eve scrutinized Huey's bruised face.
What happened to you?
Horse.
Huey hoped that was enough.
I heard that horse had a J-Bar brand on it.
She danced away with Walter.
Ain't you dancing, Huey Calloway?
Snort Yarnell had walked up behind Huey.
You been fired again?
No, me and old man Jessup have come to an understanding. He goes where he wants to and I go where I want to. A lot less aggravation that way. Looks like your little brother's having himself a time.
Too good a time. Look at that grin on his face, like a possum licking cream.
Yeah, if he ain't careful, his cowboy days are numbered. That'd be a waste of good talent. What you going to do about it, Huey?
Damn if I know. Something.
I know what I'm going to do. There's several bottles of good drinking whiskey out yonder in the bush. Not doing nobody any good. Join me?
Oh, don't mind if I do.
Huey looked back. Fat Gervin watched Walter and Eve with envy in his eyes.
Wait a minute, Snort. I believe I just gave birth to an idea.
Huey walked where Fat stood, his gaze wistfully following the pair.
Howdy, Fat.
Fat flashed him a resentful look.
Frank's the name.
Yeah. I was wondering if you'd do me a favor, Fat. That girl has been dancing with my brother ever since she came. Won't let him dance with anybody else. Him and me would both take it as a favor if you'd go out there and cut in.
Fat instantly shed his resentment.
It'd be a pleasure. Thanks, Huey.
It's you that deserves the thanks.
Huey watched with satisfaction as Fat worked his way through the dancers and tapped Walter on the shoulder. Huey couldn't hear the words, but he saw the look of surprise on Eve's face and dismay on Walter's. Fat danced away with Eve, leaving Walter standing in the midst of the dancers. He weaved through the crowd to where Huey waited.
I don't understand. What's this cutting in business?
You ain't been to many dances. Generally, the girl lets somebody know she'd like to change partners. Like as not, she gave Fat a signal.
She wouldn't do that. We were having a good time.
You were, anyway. She probably got tired of you stepping on her feet. Come on, me and Snort were fixing to have a drink.
Outside, Snort was talking to a lanky rancher whose shirt tail was halfway out and whose string tie was undone, dangling beneath a prominent Adam's apple.
Boys, come over here and meet somebody.
The rancher extended a bottle toward the brothers.
You fellas look like you could stand a little drop of kindness.
Walter hung back, turning so he could watch the open barn door. Huey accepted the offer. He was no connoisseur, but he knew this was not ordinary over-the-bar whiskey.
Oh, prime stuff.
The rancher nodded, pleased.
Kentucky's finest. You can taste the bluegrass. Are you all friends of Snort Yarn now?
Like we'd known him all our lives.
Well, this here is Alvin Laudermilk. Got him a ranch out yonder way.
He waved his hand vaguely. Yonder way could have been in any direction.
It ain't near as big as CC's or old man Jessup's, but it's mine.
A woman came out of the barn and stood in the doorway, peering into the darkness. Laudermilk quickly moved behind a wagon.
My wife, Cora, she don't hold with strong drink.
He watched until the woman went back inside.
I gotta take me a chaw of tobacco to cover up my breath.
You sure she'd rather smell chewing tobacco than whiskey?
Oh, she don't like either one, but she can't holler much about the tobacco. Her old mother dipped snuff. Boys, that woman's breath would knock a skunk into the ditch.
Walter declined Laudermilk's offer of the bottle.
I still can't believe it. I didn't take Eve to be the fickle type.
Just shows that a cowboy ought to stick to horses. With a horse, he's either gentle or he throws you off. He don't leave you wondering where you stand.
I love my Cora dearly, but there's days when I wonder if we're both speaking the same language. I mean, there's times when I almost wish I'd never got married. Of course, I always get over that notion when I set myself down to the table.
Walter looked inside the barn again. Fat was waltzing with Eve, clumsily bumping against other dancers.
It beats me what she can see in him.
Well, some women like him chunky. There's more to get a hold of. I know this has got your goat, but you'll be a better man for knowing the truth. Now let's go over to the saloon. They got the right medicine to treat what ails you.
That's a dandy idea. I believe I'll go with you. First round's on me.
What about your wife?
Oh, she's already mad anyway. She'll be over it in 2 or 3 days.
Alvin, you're a good old boy.
Walter was still nursing his first drink at the bar when Huey, Snort, and Laudermilk were working on their third. Grady Welch had joined them, breathing heavily after his dancing with most of the younger women. He seemed unaware of Walter's distress.
You ought to be out at Shelby's barn, Walter. Fat Gervin is beating your time.
That was spark enough to light Walter's fuse. He turned toward the door.
I'm fixing to go see about that.
Huey grabbed at him, but missed.
Sorry, boys. I'd better try to keep my little brother from getting himself in trouble.
He followed Walter out into the night and down toward the barn, where the music continued to play in lively rhythm.
Hey, Walter, hold up!
Walter slowed, but didn't stop. Huey trotted to catch up to him.
You oughtn't to do anything that'll make you look foolish. Accept it. You ain't no ladies' man.
Walter kept walking, not attempting a reply. As they neared the barn, they saw two men escorting Fat out the door, holding firmly to his arms. They gave him a shove.
Don't you be coming back!
Fat seemed bewildered.
What's the trouble, Fat?
All she had to do was say no. Her being just a waitress, I thought.
He fixed a baleful gaze on Huey.
Well, next time you want somebody to take over a gal, don't pick on me.
As Fat trudged off toward the saloon, Walter turned on Huey.
What'd he mean, take over a gal?
Damned if I know. That fat don't always make sense.
Mrs. Pearson came out, Eve at her side. She spotted Walter and made straight for him, her face severe.
It's your fault. You left me with that awful Fat Gervin.
What happened?
He made an indecent proposal to Eve, that's what. And she slapped him. It was his good luck that a couple of gentlemen hustled him out of that barn quick. Some of the young men were getting ready to stomp on him.
Why didn't you cut back in?
I thought you wanted to dance with him.
I don't know where you got such a fool idea.
But Huey said...
I must have made a mistake.
Now both Walter and Eve turned their anger on Huey. Defensively, he raised his hands and backed up a step.
I never was good at reading women's minds.
I bet you can read my mind now.
He thought for a few seconds that she was going to strike him. He wouldn't know how to handle that.
Eve, I did enjoy dancing with you. I'd be pleased to dance with you again if you'll go back in there with me.
She shook her head.
I'm too mad to face that crowd anymore tonight. And I'm too mad to stand here talking to you. Next time you think about asking me to dance, don't.
Walter looked as if he'd been knocked down by a runaway wagon he hadn't seen coming.
Eve.
Eve turned away toward the boarding house. Mrs. Pearson gave both brothers a withering glance.
Good night, gentlemen.
As the women moved away, Walter looked after them.
I'll be over for breakfast. Maybe we can talk.
There won't be any empty chairs.
Huey tried to measure his words.
Look, someday, you'll look back on this and be glad it turned out like it did. You could have got yourself trapped, and she'd pretty soon have you hooked up to a plow. You're too good a cowboy, Walter, to waste your life like that.
The next time you feel like butting into my business, don't.
Walter strode away, making it clear that he didn't want Huey to walk with him. Lying on the pool table, Huey slept fitfully. He was assaulted by dreams of Eve and Mrs. Pearson beating him with broom handles, of Eve driving away in a wagon with Walter. When that nightmare faded, he was certain he saw the rustler Smith Trumbull coming after him with a pistol. As he awakened for the 10th time, fighting his blanket, he gave up any attempt at sleep. Walter was lying on the floor, awake. He turned away when he saw that Huey was looking at him.
I'm thinking about going over to the boarding house and apologizing to that girl.
You've caused trouble enough already. Stay away from her.
Huey fished for the right words.
I never had no thought of hurting you. I've always looked out for you the best I could, like a big brother's supposed to.
I'm not as little a brother as you think I am. I'm a grown man, and I can handle myself pretty good, thank you.
Yeah, I reckon you're right. It ain't my place to do the thinking for you anymore.
He lay back down on his blanket and began trying to figure out the best way to keep Walter and Eve apart. C.C. Tarpley poked his head in the bunkhouse door after the crew returned to the ranch from their holiday in town.
Anybody in here sober?
Oh, C.C., you know nobody in this outfit ever drinks.
Only when they get the chance.
Tarpley beckoned Huey, Walter, and Grady outside.
Y'all come and go with me. I got something to talk to you about.
Looking around to be sure no one else could hear, he led them to a corral fence and leaned his bony shoulder against it.
Boys, I hope y'all will do something for me.
That sounded as if they had a choice. They didn't if they wanted to keep working for the two C's.
I've been tallying the figures. Our Brandon came up a match short. The way it looks to me, somebody's been skimming off part of the crop. I see the fine hand of Eli Jessup in this.
It was dry last year. Maybe the cows didn't breed up like they ought to.
Ain't nothing wrong with our cows or our bulls either. They know their job. Old Eli's still Brandon. Now, I ain't exactly saying he's a thief, but on the other hand, there's no bounds to his ambition.
Huey doubted that Tarpley's ambition knew any bounds either, but the boss wouldn't want to hear that. Tarpley lowered his voice as if he were divulging a military secret.
I'd like for you boys to sneak out of here and scout around over Eli's country. I got a hunch you might find some J-Bar branded calves sucking on 2C's cows. If you do, I'll put the sheriff under that old reprobate like I'd sick a dog under a coyote.
I know most of the boys that work for Eli, and they're good folks. They'd quit before they'd be a party to such as that.
Tarpley looked annoyed at having his judgment questioned.
Well, maybe you don't know them as well as you think. There's many a man will forget about his conscience if there's enough profit to be had.
But every once in a while, Eli gathers up 2C strays and sends them back here where they belong. He could just as easy keep them.
Maybe he does that just so I don't suspicion him.
Well, if he catches us poking around over there, he'll be the one that calls for the sheriff.
See to it that you don't get caught. Stay away from where he's still gathering and branding. Scout around where he's already moved on.
Grady reluctantly nodded acceptance.
Eli's got a lot of country. How long do you want us to keep looking?
Till you're plumb satisfied, one way or t'other.
Huey glanced at Walter. One good thing about this assignment, it would keep him away from town and that girl.
This might take a right smart while. We'll need to pack plenty of grub.
Tarpley's face pinched at the thought.
Well, go easy on the expenses. Money don't come easy around here.
Huey already knew that.
Don't tell anybody where you're going. I wouldn't want the word to get to Eli. I'd wager $10. Well, maybe $5. He's got a spy or two on this place, on my payroll.
The idea that some of his money might be going to an enemy spy appeared to cause him considerable pain. Huey immediately thought of Fat Gervin, but rejected the idea. Not that Fat was above such a thing, but he didn't seem to have that much ambition.
And don't you boys flash any firearms. That'd just give Eli's crew an excuse to shoot you. If you do happen to get caught, just say you were drunk and got lost. That'll sound logical.
The three watched CeCe head back to the big house. Grady looked as if he'd bitten into a sour apple.
Me get lost? I know every cow trail and rabbit track from here to Pontoon Crossing. We won't find any two C's calves over there. Old Eli ain't no cow thief. Even if he is as ornery as a sore-footed badger.
The boss may not always be right, but he's the one that pays us.
Grady started for the kitchen.
Let's go jaw with Soapy.
They tried to get supplies without letting Soapy in on the secret, but the cook was a step ahead of them.
CC's always suspicion that Eli's stealing from him, but I think you boys are off on a snipe hunt. When it's over, you'll be holding an empty sack.
Well, it's CC's sack. We'll be drawing our 6 bits a day regardless.
6 bits? I'm getting $1.25 and don't even have to climb on a horse.
Grady impatiently turned toward the door.
Throw the stuff in a couple of sacks, Soapy. We'll saddle up and come back for it.
Just a couple sacks? That'll be lean pickings if we're out for very long.
Ain't you ever ate jackrabbit?
Never did.
No matter. With y'all doing your own cooking, most of it won't be fit to eat no way.
Huey was inclined to agree with Grady and Soapy about the futility of the mission Tarpley had assigned. They seemed confident that however numerous his faults might be, Eli Jessup was not one to steal cattle from his neighbors, beyond the common practice of slaughtering strays for beef. On the other hand, the saving grace might be that the trip would keep Walter occupied. Huey's brother had spoken to him but little since the incident at the dance. Perhaps a change of scenery would have healing powers. Huey envied Len Tanner as he listened to stories about adventures the ranger had known. Crossing over onto Jessup's range provided a tingling sense of adventure and risk. Maybe he'd not been born too late after all.
Eli's got a good bunch of boys working for him, but it's best we don't stumble into any of them. They might feel duty-bound to tell him they saw us. Eli's got the same suspicious mind as CC. He'd figure we're out to steal from him.
How do we know where to go and where not to?
I worked for Eli my first year out here. I know his country and the way he works. Wherever we find the calves already branded, we can be satisfied that he's finished working that part of the place.
It didn't take long to find the first J-Bar cattle. Huey's limited experience told him Jessup's range was stocked more heavily than Tarpley's. Jessup probably figured Tarpley received more rain, just another reason to resent him. But the fact was that he had more cattle searching after a limited amount of grass. No wonder Jessup was always looking for more land and allowing his stock to push over Tarpley's outer perimeter. It was not easy to see the J-Bar cattle close up. Worked recently, they were leery of horseback riders. Huey, Walter, and Grady had to circle around and hold them up for a good look at the brands. The first group set the pattern. Grady checked them over.
Not a two C's amongst them.
Near nightfall, Grady pointed to a distant windmill.
Pretty good water there. It'll be a place to camp for the night and rest the horses.
We could rest them for a week, no more good than we're doing.
We're following orders and earning our time.
Soapy had wrapped some beef and put it in one of the sacks.
We'd just as well eat hearty. It won't keep long anyway. After this, it'll be sow belly and whatever we can find. We might manage to kill us a javelina hog.
They don't look fit to eat, with those long teeth and all that bristly hair.
You don't eat the hair. Javelinas are fair to middling if they ain't too scrawny.
Huey had seen several of the wild pigs. Scared up by the horses, they would go clattering away into the nearest brush, snorting and grunting in alarm. They were a far cry from the domestic hogs Huey remembered on the farm. It had not occurred to him that they might make a decent supper. Brady watched the frying steak in a small skillet over the fire.
Ain't far from here to the old Butterfield Trail. There was thousands of immigrants passed over it, going and coming. You could tell which ones was heading west, full of faith and hope. They left ham bones and tin cans behind them. Coming back east, they was usually wore out and dragging their feet. All you found in their camps was rabbit fur and quail bones.
I expect when they got to this part of the country, it looked like the jumping off place to hell.
Charles Goodnight called the Pecos River the grave of a cowman's hopes. But it's not as poor as it sometimes looks. A man has just got to know how to manage it. CeCe does pretty good. Eli tries to wring more out of it than he can give.
His stomach full, Huey stretched out on his blanket and watched the evening star brighten the darkening sky. The night birds turned up for their evening concert, and somewhere in the distance, a cow bawled for her strayed calf. He felt contented with the world.
Grady, is there anything you'd rather do than be a cowpuncher?
I've studied on it some. Never came up with anything better.
Me neither.
They looked at Walter, but he had nothing to say.